You're listening to Cat Killer on Radio KOL. I'm Tom Pike from the TV Tropes web series Echo Chamber. A few months ago, we recorded this interview about Echo Chamber's first season. The second season is set to premiere on June 5th. You're about to hear the original interview, which should give you an idea of what you missed. If you want to see more, go to tvtropes.org/EC.
So today is extra special because I have with me the three main cast members of Echo Chamber, the TV Tropes web series. So welcome, Tom Pike, Zach Walnow, and Dana Shaw. Say hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
You guys are lame.
Do we both say hi, guys?
You're not funny.
What do you think?
So I thought before we launch into the probing questions, because I have to admit I'm a terribly harsh interviewer, as you'll see later, I asked our guests to play KOL for a week to see what they thought of it, and I don't think they did, but Dana's already a KOLer. So Tom and Zach, you tried the game at least?
Oh yeah,
totally. What class did you take?
Turtlemancer, or whatever it is.
I talked Tom out of everything else and was like, you should club seals. He was like, okay. You wanted to be a sorcerer or a costumancer?
Yeah, sorcerer, because that is just the best word I've ever heard in my life. And I did not care how badly it played or how soon it would die.
But I knew he would have more fun clubbing seals than anything else.
It's beautiful.
I am feeling the hate on the Disco Bandit. My class of choice is the Disco Bandit. I love the Disco Bandit.
Right. For me, my first one was Accordion Thief, so hooray for Moxie.
I actually play an accordion, fun fact.
Yeah, but...
Not well.
I mean, who plays the accordion well, realistically?
Weird Al?
Oh, yeah, okay. That is a reasonable... You're right.
Okay, so how did you find the game when you tried it out? This is more for Tom and Zach, because we know that Dana has already tried it.
Mm-hmm. I kept messing up navigating around the map.
Yeah, he couldn't figure out the map. It was really funny.
Apparently that is the biggest challenge in the game, aside from the crates, really. I think my biggest enemy was myself.
I'd believe that. In a heartbeat, I'd believe that.
And how far into the game did you get?
I got the tutorial, man. Seriously, talk to Dana.
Okay, well, Dana, you're more of a long-term KOLer, so what sort of player are you?
I generally stay away from PvP just because people tend to kick my ass. I've ascended twice. I'm a Postomancer, level 8. And I'm the type to go away for a little while and then remember, oh, right, Kingdom of Loathing, and then come back and play it for about a month and a half and then go away for a little while. And yeah. Generally, I make it so I'm generally a teetotaler.
You sound like someone who's married but has a mistress that every now and then remember, oh, yeah, child support.
I should pay that before I get my ass kicked.
Well, the amount of time and money and effort that KOL takes from many of our listeners, it probably is their mistress.
Mm. Yeah, much.
Because we have donations to the KOL itself. We have mini meets and cons all over the world, mm-hmm. and several hours a day people spend playing it.
I have done that. I have spent several hours in a day playing. And then I realize it's 5 in the morning and, oh no, I have class at 9. That's a problem.
So, moving on to the show itself, do you think you could describe the show a little and maybe tell us what the aim of the series was?
I hate having to sum up TV tropes, so I am going to tell your listeners to read the Tome of Tropes. There's a There's an object in Kingdom of Loathing that is essentially about TV tropes, and it's on your wiki. So yeah, read that article, because essentially it sums up that this thing will kick your ass, you will waste a lot of time on it, and it sounds like your listeners really have a lot of spare time. So, you know, between doing this...
They're certainly used to wikis.
20 hours a day, yeah. So what it is it's a wiki, basically, of plot devices and television shows and other forms of media that use them. So, like, you'll find... The damsel in distress, that's a trope. And you'll
the psycho ex-girlfriend is mm-hmm. a trope.
Yeah. And when you go to one of the trope pages, it'll have a list of all of the forms of media that have used it. And when you go to, like, the page of a film, say, like, The Princess Bride, it'll list all of the tropes that that uses. And this is an excellent way to waste any time or ruin any relationships that you might have. So that's the site.
You know, I had totally forgotten that there was a KOL item called the Tome of Tropes.
Yeah.
For our listeners' benefit, the Tome of Tropes was an item that came along Crimbo 2010 when we were beset by the Crimbomination again, and it became a large corporation, and you had to go and fight elves. And the office worker elves, amongst the things that they dropped... where I think there was a book of faces, and it was essentially lots of ways to waste time at work, one of which was the Tome of Tropes, and another was the Best Game Ever, or the BGE, which was, of course, a loving homage to KOL.
So, yeah, basically, I think these two things dovetail pretty well, except that you will have no personal life if you consume both. But the show... that we have is called Echo Chamber, and when I was tasked with making a show for TV Tropes, I thought, well, this show needs to be about fiction. I can't just make a web show that is like any other web show. So in the show, it is about a TV Tropes vlogger, someone who is trying to make a web show for TV Tropes and failing pretty miserably. So yeah, it's more or less about failure.
Yeah, just like your whole life.
That's kind of a thing that people comment on a lot, is how much are you guys like your characters? Because all of our characters are named after ourselves. We are all playing fictionalized versions of ourselves. And we had a friend who described Dana and I, our characters, as basically you guys, but with your likable attributes removed.
So you've just ninja'd one of my questions, but... So what I've got here is... I'm not sure if I've written this question correctly, but we basically... This is a show about a show within a show.
Yes.
Yeah.
And possibly at times it goes a level deeper than that.
Yes.
Yeah.
How do you keep track of it?
We don't.
We don't at all.
It's...
No.
I have actually lost track of it. That's why I'm making those... We have a production blog now, which you can find linked off of our main page on TV Tropes.
Which, by the way, is tvtropes.org/EC. E like echo, C like chamber.
Yeah. So we have a production blog now, and the main reason that I am updating it is so that I can keep track of what I did when. And, like, I'll take the post and I'll send them to Zach, and I'll be like, Zach, did this happen? So,
occasionally, yes.
Like, no, man.
No. Yeah. So basically we keep track of it by not...
doing anything.
It's really difficult. It's really difficult, because with the premise of it, I was deliberately inviting people to blur the line between fiction and reality, and I blurred it a little for myself.
It really gets confusing. There are conversations that are in the show that we can't remember if we had them for the purpose of the show, like, or if we had them beforehand, or if we then had them afterwards. Like, it's
for the
it
record,
actually hurts my mind.
This particular conversation we are having right now, they will be having in season two.
Yeah.
So,
spoiler alert.
Although, funny story, I had this conversation planned before we're having it now. So, yeah.
Yeah, we had it and we decided it'd be really good to have it in the show because we didn't actually understand what was going on at that point.
So, do you, tropers and geeks generally are quite well known for picking apart the continuity of series. Do you ever worry about keeping everything like straight and in line so that they can't pick huge plot holes in your writing?
Luckily, we have all of these things that we've done readily available on the internet for us to watch if we ever get confused about things. So we can just be like, do you think Dana would, I don't know, punch a clown in the face? I don't know.
In episode 4, she specifically said she would never punch a clown in the face. All right, we're good. The actual problem that I have sometimes is that our scripts go through about 1 to 4 rewrites per script, and then in the shooting of it, we'll improvise, and in the editing room, we'll cut. And sometimes I'll remember a line that we wrote that we rehearsed, and I'll be like, oh, I can allude to that line. I can reference that line. And then I'll write a reference to it, and then I'll realize, oh, yeah, that did not make it into the final cut, and people have no idea what I'm talking about. So that happens sometimes, but we usually catch it. What was I going to say about... gosh.
Womp, womp, womp.
What was your question? I had another answer, but... Sorry, I really took you up on your whole ramble offer.
It was what do we get confused with the levels of meta levels.
I forget what I was going to say about that.
Okay. It probably wasn't going to be more interesting.
No.
Or more helpful, yeah.
As you were talking about the writing process there, do you all write together as like a group or?
I do the funny.
Zach, I help.
Yeah. Zach is most helpful in the phase where I'm like, hey Zach, I wrote 10 pages and it needs to be not 10 pages long. And Zach's like, red pen.
I love that part.
Yeah. The first...
Tom writes the first draft of most of the scripts. Sometimes I do, but he usually writes the first drafts. I look at them and say, these aren't funny, and then I inject funny in them, and then Zach looks at them and is like, my lines aren't funny enough, so he makes them funnier.
And my lines never become funny.
Yeah.
Basically.
Tom is secretly not funny.
That's not really a
secret. It's not really a secret. He's just not funny. Sorry.
So, like, we basically have the same thing going on in the show, you see, except that we laugh after we're done insulting each other. That's really the difference.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, I know that tensions can often run, like, really high on film crews. Do you ever just want to kill each other?
Absolutely.
Oh, you should tell her about the end of last season.
Mostly Zach. I'll let Zach field this question.
Okay.
Aw.
Like a misanthrope.
I just sound like such a dick when I tell the story. that I basically just like was burned out and exhausted and hated all of you. And like, but what happened with the finale?
Yeah.
You were like trying to tell me that we had to put like a giant floating TV screen in the middle of the white void. And it like nearly came to blows. And I was like telling you that you were like complete poppycock and you were full of shit. And I'm like screaming at you. We'd have someone defuse the situation. That was good.
Yeah.
That's like par for the course.
Yeah. The scene wound up being brilliant. We were just exhausted. We'd been working... We were basically working 40 hours a week on this thing, and, you know, we have lives outside of it.
You don't.
I mean, typically... We resolve our disputes, you know, amicably, like gentlemen, pistols at dawn. But sometimes
we're gentle ladies.
Sometimes.
Yeah. So we all took a week off after that was done and we all came back and we were like, oh my God, Echo Chamber is fun again.
Yeah. It was pretty great.
We don't hate each other anymore.
We need a more rigid, production schedule for the next season because,
which is where our actual producer comes in to play.
So that we don't get all piled up near the end, because the season finale, which everyone seemed to like, it could have been like really awful if we hadn't come together at the end. If we hadn't made it work, it could have just not happened because we were making that the week of.
Also, that particular script wasn't funny until that week.
Yeah,
which was a problem. Funny.
It wasn't funny until I put the puppets in it.
I put the puppets in it. We all wanted the puppets.
We all wanted the puppets
there.
That's
true. It's true.
But you made the puppets happen.
It's true.
Can I tell you something about those puppets? I don't remember if I told you last time, but Zach did not wash those socks before he made puppets. I don't know why didn't... Never
mind. They're more authentic. They're more authentic, Tom. They smell just like you.
Well, luckily... I was the one in that scene who was like, I'm going to go behind the camera and tell you if this looks crappy. So I did not have to touch them. Thank God.
Well, I just went through my laundry. It was like, missing sock, missing sock. Okay, we have three socks. We have three puppets. It was a good plan.
My job in that scene was to hold up the blue curtain, which was just a sheet behind them. So, like, you've got the director of the show holding a sheet, like, standing on a bed holding a sheet over two people who are hunched behind a little outdoor.
Not like that.
Your camera guy. Yeah.
Your camera guy is holding a puppet, and one of the characters who's like, cameras, what are those? Is like running the whole show.
And our composer was the other puppet operator. Yeah. Was the guy who wrote our theme song. So pretty much on Echo Chamber,
anything goes.
If a job needs to be done, it needs to be done, and we do it.
You need to get yourselves a production assistant. Then you give them all the jobs.
We're getting one. We're so excited to have someone to push around. I really hope they don't listen to this.
But yeah, no, you're absolutely right. We need someone who can pick up the pieces that we drop, basically.
A lackey, if you will.
Yes.
Would you say that then that last episode, which for anyone who's listening who hasn't seen it, has all sorts of different things from puppets to animation to fantasy costumes and so on, and excessive use of blue screen, I believe, or green screen?
White screen.
Yeah.
White screen.
Zach, go ahead and explain the effect, because that's pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah. Well, the effect's a giant white sheet with a bunch of lamps on it.
Okay. Maybe
there
I should
explain the effect.
Well, it's a seamless
white backdrop, like what they use in like fashion and photo shoots. You know, it's just a giant curved piece of cloth, and you put a lot of light on it, and it makes the background a giant white glowing wall, which looks perfect for the effect of a white void, because it has this nice wraparound.
It looks like the characters, without spoiling who or where, well, I am spoiling where, but it looks like the characters are standing in a giant white void with no ceiling or floor or walls, and it kind of makes you wonder where they're standing, and it makes you wonder other things, but you'll have to see the episode.
The secret is that they're not standing, they're actually falling the whole time.
That actually is my theory.
Is that your theory? I was just lying.
Oh, okay. Well, see, here's the problem is when we say something, it becomes canon. And
Damn it.
I assume it's like The Matrix, and that, you know, at any minute, I could just like load a lot of guns. Maybe. We should do that next season.
No, let's not do that.
Every now and then, Zach says something exactly like his character would.
So, yeah, all we are is exaggerations of ourselves.
Especially, think about if, with the tensions running that high, if we had guns there.
That would be awesome.
That would be a problem.
It would have made a really cool scene, but there would have been no one left to edit it.
No.
So, was that the most difficult episode to make?
No. I don't think so.
Which would you say, Zach?
Don't have to disappoint was impossible. And technically, Walk and Talk was, I think, the most exhausting, but it was easy once we had it done.
Yeah, because we didn't have to do anything with it. It was just a Walk and Talk. Continuous. Yeah. And we were like, that's one scene.
We should explain what these are. Right. Walk and Talk is a plot device where, well, it's pretty much exactly what it says on the tin. The characters walk and they talk. And it's used a lot in West Wing. Basically, it's an excuse.
Kenneth Branagh did it first.
Yeah, it's an excuse to have something more visually interesting happening than just two people sitting talking at each other. And so we did an episode on the walk and talk trope in which we walked and talked, and it's one continuous take.
For 2 minutes, please.
Yeah. So that was so easy to edit because I was like, okay.
It's finished.
I caught it. And then So
it was a brutal shoot, though.
Giant spiral for a couple of hours trying to film this thing.
And Zach was walking backwards.
And Zach was walking backwards, as we stated in the video. Yeah.
Hence the final line. My legs hurt. Not false.
Well, actually, your final line is something more like "ugh,"
which is how I felt. I just wasn't letting up on it.
Yeah. And the other one that we were just talking about is Dumbass Has a Point, which is basically another way of saying even a broken clock is right twice a day. Zach's character is he seems really brainless, or scatterbrained, really, for the first few episodes. And then in this one episode, my character is trying to do something really difficult with editing. He's trying to make a title montage, basically. He's trying to make a title sequence, and he can't make it happen. And it turns out that Zach knows how to make it happen. But this episode went through more rewrites than any other episode that we did.
It was awful, and we all hated it. And we're like, this isn't funny, and people are going to hate it, and I don't understand.
I hated it by the time we were done with it.
I mean, I hated it after we wrote the first draft of it. I'm like, why are we doing this? Oh, damn you, we needed character development. That's the only reason we wound up doing it.
There was a gap in the story that needed to be filled by showing that Tom could do something that didn't suck.
Yeah.
And
even then, he didn't do it. It was
a collaboration.
He was able to delegate.
They said that I stayed up and I learned After Effects I learned vector graphics and I really need to sleep now, so bye.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think we reshot that twice because the first one was
three times.
There was a camera malfunction, which we wound up, most of our footage was terrible. And then we realized that the script wasn't funny still.
There were a couple of times where we realized, oh crap, this script isn't funny. We need to do, like, for example, the second episode, which was Freudian Excuse. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We realized about halfway through editing it, we were like, crap, none of this is funny.
What actually, the way I remember it was that Show Within a Show came out. That was our first one. It explained the premise of the series. And I was like, yep, that's a pretty good episode. And then I saw the response to it, and it wasn't, you know, the response was good, but all of a sudden I realized, oh my god, people are going to watch this. These cannot suck. Like, these cannot just be me and my friends running around with a camera. And
or it could be exactly that, Tom.
Well, I have to pretend they're not.
Right.
and so the pressure was on, and we were like, all right, we got to go and reshoot a lot of stuff. And we did, and that's why...
We wound up doing rewrites there at the reshoot. I was just like, Tom, we've shot this scene 6 times and it's equally not funny. So I just took I stole his computer and was like, all right, give me 20 minutes. And then I made it
better.
Still not funny, but better.
This is why we ran into a roadblock with Mysterious Employer. Was in our production schedule, we had left room for reshoots. We had not left room for reshoots and me getting mono.
And me taking a vacation.
So all of those things happened. We finished the season, and thank God for that. But we, we're not going to release season 2 probably until we are done shooting everything. And now we know what's expected of us, you know? So, anyway, it's been a fun journey.
Yeah.
Ramble.
I've spoken for about, 20 minutes now.
You're listening to Cat Killer on Radio KOL. The interview you just heard was about the first season of Echo Chamber, the TV Tropes web show. The second season comes out on June 5th. To see the first season, go to tvtropes.org/EC.